Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:52 Pacific Summer Time, and today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, if we have a review of what's been happening this week, well, then it's really been centered on Europe and what's been happening with the ECB. Well, they've suspended their sanitization of quantitative easing. So, in other words, they've kick-started quantitative easing once more. Well, that's a green light for asset price inflation. Well, they introduced a negative deposit rate for the excess reserves that banks have. So, well, that's not particularly positive for the banking sector, but it's probably going to be offset by the fact that they're going to initiate purchases of asset-backed securities. Well, that's very positive indeed. That means that, well, that's a sector in Europe that has been really quite staid and pretty illiquid. Part of the reason for that is because there's just really nobody willing to buy these securities from the banks. They haven't been able to securitize them, and nobody really has any kind of visibility on just what they're worth. So, well, it's been a pretty tight market. There's a couple of funds, but not many, that really perform in this sector, and they've been doing pretty well. Well, the fact that the ECB is going to go in there and start buying these things means that it's creating a secondary market. It's really copper fastening the sector. It means that these are probably going to outperform. Well, elsewhere this week, you've had, if you think about exactly where we are in the monetary cycle, well, the ECB has just signaled that they're going to increase the size of or the amount of liquidity that they're throwing at the market. Well, Japan is doing exactly the same thing, and the Fed, while tapering its additions, is still adding new money. Well, capital doesn't stay put. Particularly in a global economy, it goes to where you have the most attractive assets or the highest yield, and potentially the market where you get the most to gain from the currency. Well, when you get all three of those going in your favor, well, then things start to look very, very nice indeed. Well, Wall Street continues to hit these new highs. The S&P 500 was up another 0.46% today. It's up to 1949. Well, it broke through the 1900 area last week. People will obviously be looking at it and thinking, well, is it going to get to 2000? Well, it might well do. If we think about just what that would mean, it would mean that the market has become approximately 12 or 13% overextended relative to the 200-day moving average, which would suggest that the possibility of a pullback would be increased. Well, that's certainly a possibility. But in the absence of a clear downward dynamic, you'd have to continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But I guess this isn't really a time for new money. This is a time to be looking at the market and thinking, well, there's potential for a pullback here. But in the absence of some pretty dire consequences, that it's probably nothing more than a pullback, considering just how much liquidity is out there. Well, when you think about other markets, well, Europe wasn't able to hold on to all of its gain yesterday, but just about the whole of Western Europe was in positive territory today, and well, Spain and Italy continued to outperform on the upside. When the bigger markets and the core markets are up about 0.5%, these markets tend to be up about 1%, and well, that was certainly the case today. Well, the French market was up 0.7%, and the Italian market was up 1.5%, the Spanish market was up 1.7%. Well, this is reflation in Europe. Well, there's an awful lot of the bad news that has been priced into equities for Europe is being dispelled. And the fact that the ECB is adopting quantitative easing means that the pressure that's been brought to bear on the domestic economies of Europe is moderating at the very least. Well, it isn't just Europe that is going to benefit from the ECB's quantitative easing. Among the markets that really are powering ahead in here today, one is Brazil. Well, Brazil was up 3% today, and that's it finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average for the first time in a while. Now, that market has been ranging with a downward bias for nearly 3 years. It's been a volatile range, but it is certainly rallying at present. The currency has steadied up, that the Bank of Brazil is willing to defend the 2.4 area, and at least it demonstrated that it's willing to do that. the banking sector is outperforming the wider market. Well, that's something that we look for at Fuller Tracy Money as a sign that it's a liquidity-driven market. Well, as liquidity providers, the financial sector should do well in a bull market. And, well, Brazil has really been under the cosh for the last 3 years. So the fact that you have the banks leading to the upside really is very positive. Well, the biggest bank in the country is Itaú, and that's firming here in the, well, it broke out 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's found support in the region of the MA and the upper side of the underlying range. Well, you'd need to see it a clear downward dynamic to question potential for additional upside here. Well, Banco Bradesco was among the better performers in here today. So it's pretty broad-based in the financial sector. Well, Petrobras has spent a fortune on developing the pre-salt oil reserves. And, well, that has taken an enormous toll on the share price. And, of course, it's the second largest constituent of the Bovespa right now. So, well, that means, well, it used to be the biggest, but, of course, it's fallen so much that it now only occupies about 7% of the index. Well, it's found support in the region of the 200-day moving average. Well, this isn't the first time it's done that. Previously, when it's pushed back above the MA, it's failed. So it will need to sustain this breakout, but it's fallen sufficiently, and valuations have contracted enough that, well, maybe this is the end of the downtrend. Well, if you get one of the banks outperforming, they represent a fairly substantial weighting in the market, and you get Petrobras starting to turn around, well, we could be in for a pretty impressive rally in somewhere like Brazil. Well, I guess the one that hasn't done anything yet is Vale. Well, that's because people are looking at the iron ore price and, well, they're pretty worried and they don't know what's going to happen with China and its steel industry. Well, but that doesn't will detract from the fact that the share is cheap. Well, if you start to get this move in the resources sector, well, then that should be positive for Brazil. Well, the Russian market, well, is also cheap, but you have this, well, it comes down to governance, and governance really is everything. Well, Russia's got a lot going for it, but governance isn't one of them. Well, Brazil is certainly performing. And Mexico was also up by 1.4% in here today. And, well, that's another market that's benefiting from improving governance and also the fact that its currency has been, well, it's been a bit firmer than other emerging market currencies over the last while. Well, you have the index now pushing the upper side of the range for the last year, and there's really no evidence yet that it's going to encounter anything more than temporary resistance here. Well, Mexico does look like it is going to go higher. When we think about this over the medium to longer term, then, well, something that has been a theme, or something that we've been talking about, it's incorrect to call it a theme, but it has certainly been a topic at this service for really the last 6 months, is that in the mature phase of a cyclical bull market, you get cyclicals moving to outperformance. Well, part of the reason for that is because they are more sensitive to the situation as it is now, whereas you get growth oriented sectors that tend to price in progressively more into the future. So they move to positions of underperformance, and cyclicals move to positions of outperformance in the latter stages of a cyclical bull market. Well, that's exactly what we're seeing. The resources sector is moving to a position of outperformance. That, well, part of the reason for that is that we're 5 years into an impressive uptrend, and that there isn't that much out there that's still cheap. Well, when people look around for, cast around for something that can give them a higher yield and come in at a better price or a lower valuation, well, then the resources sector is starting to look more attractive. Well, if one strips out the iron ore miners, because they have been under severe pressure and there's a lot of uncertainty, and you look at some of those that are more positioned for the industrial metals, like nickel, zinc, and tin and lead and copper, Well, then you get quite a different perspective on this market. Well, Alcoa, for example, has been rallying for much of the last year. That's generally quite positive. Well, we haven't seen any evidence yet that the medium-term uptrend has ended. Certainly, it looks mature, but it's not over. And we'll know what it looks like when it is over, because we'll see these markets sustaining moves below their 200-day moving averages. They'll encounter resistance at the MA, and then they'll decline further. But when people look at these markets and they say that they're mature, well, then it's very important to draw the delineation between a cyclical and a secular bull market. When we say that we're mature in the cyclical bull market, that doesn't mean that we're mature in a secular bull market, quite the opposite. The S&P 500 has really only broken out of a 13-year range in the last 6 months. Well, ranges are explosions waiting to happen. And this has been and remains a very powerful breakout. Well, as long as the breakout remains and as long as momentum continues to push it higher, you'd have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But generally speaking, when something has broken out of such a very long range, you'd get some form of consolidation post that. Well, that wouldn't be so surprising in an environment where interest rates begin to normalize. Well, that's the other really, really big question. When are interest rates going to normalize? But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the secular bull market. Well, it all depends on when you want to start counting a secular bull market from. Well, if we go back and think about where prices were and where valuations were in the early 1980s, then, well, the market broke out in 1981, but valuations, and then pulled back to test the upper side of the underlying range. And that's when valuations bottomed nearly 18 months later. Well, valuations are not especially cheap right now. Margins are at historically high levels. And, IPOs have had a sharp pullback. So has new tech and biotech. And, the Russell hasn't quite made a new high yet. Whereas the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones, which one could describe as quality in this type of environment, have been moving to positions of outperformance. Well, that's not an indication that people are willing to take big risks here. Well, the other interesting development is that the PKW, which is the Power Shares Buyback Achievers ETF, well, it moved to a position of underperformance relative to the S&P 500 from late last year. And it's now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. Well, you might wonder, why is that important? Well, every bull market it prospers because the marginal buyer continues to increase their positions. Well, the marginal buyer in a remarkably low interest rate environment where liquidity has been abundant have been the corporations themselves buying back their own shares. Well, that ETF outperformed really pretty spectacularly from 2008 all the way through to the end of last year. And, it's moved into another range. Well, that doesn't clearly define yet that it has topped out on a relative basis. But if it starts to move below the 200-day moving average, and we are really just there right now, well, that would indicate that the companies that have done best from quantitative easing are moving to positions of underperformance. That really would be in my opinion, at least a lead indicator for the an approaching medium-term peak. So it really is a pretty interesting situation at present. We could see it bouncing from here, in which case there wouldn't be any real threat to the medium-term bull market. Well, when you see cyclicals outperforming, you don't look to them for leadership either, that these are catch-up plays. You'd really be looking for the things that did best in the advance moving to underperformance. That's what you'd be looking for. I guess I just want to drive that point home. Well, That's really about the cyclical bull market. Well, the secular bull market, well, when you go through a more than decade-long period of consolidation where expectations go down and then you get this substantial breakout, well, it's arguable as to whether the new bull market has already started. Well, bull markets don't start from extraordinarily high valuations in many people's opinions. So some people would mark the beginning of a secular bull market from when it finds support at the upper side or above the underlying range. But that's really to argue semantics. Major bull markets don't develop until there is potential for productivity growth. You need something to inspire people. You need something that can quite clearly convince people that things really are going to be better in future. Well, a lot of the social discourse has been is really fomented by the fact that people don't believe it. They don't believe that the future is going to be better. They really believe that the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and that there is a massive gulf in between. And, well, an awful lot of discourse is going on about those two subjects. Well, that's not the kind of discourse you get in a bull market. You know, big bull markets are when everybody's doing well and optimism reigns. Well, if you're going to measure the beginning of a bull market by optimism, then we're probably not there yet. Now, certainly there's a lot of optimism in the stock market, but... Well, generally speaking, that's not what you're getting in the media. But we do have the potential for productivity growth. Well, we've lifted more than 1 billion people out of poverty and into the middle classes in the last decade, and mostly in places like China and India and the high population centers. Well, much of that growth and development is now transferring to Africa. That's where population growth is highest, and that's where you're getting the development of middle classes and people moving up out of abject poverty and into the consumption classes. And that's a secular trend. Well, if we give people the opportunity to perform at their potential, then, well, by virtue, just by simple, by that fact alone, you increase productivity on a global basis. But it isn't just that, but we have this confluence of technological innovation and innovation in the energy sector. Well, that's driving productivity growth. And the industrialization of the internet means that, well, you're getting embedded processors and 3D printers and, well, industrial automation and robots and in enhancements in optics and computer programming and software and intelligent programming and genetics and biotechnology and material science and graphene. Well, it would be one thing if only one of those things was a reality, but in fact, you're getting is that you're getting confluence, that not only do you have one or two technologies, but that they're leaning on each other to create even further innovation, so that the trend of innovation is accelerating. Well, that means that, well, we've had unconventional oil and gas become a game changer for the energy sector, and the infrastructure build that is motivating in the... Well, on the Gulf Coast of the U.S. is something just beyond the comprehension of most people who hadn't anticipated it. And it means that the USA is reindustrializing. Well, that's a powerfully bullish factor. But, well, what's coming? Well, you're seeing that technology firms have their eye, their targets are trained on the utilities sector, and they fully intend to shake that up. Well, that will help to bring down the cost of power. Additionally, people are looking at solar technology not as an extractive process, but as a technology that's subject to Moore's Law. So that, well, they anticipate that they can get efficiency to increase and costs to come down over time. And we're already at efficiencies of about 44% in some of the newer technologies that are out there. So there's the pace of innovation in solar technology is increasing. Well, it means that has a groundbreaking transformational effect on energy pricing. So we're just not there yet, but we're going to be there. And that means that energy prices are likely to trend lower on average in inflation-adjusted terms over the next decade and potentially even longer. Well, reducing energy prices and enhancing the way that we consume energy, well, that's probably one of the greatest arguments yet that we could have a secular bull market developing. But when you balance that with technological innovation, and not least in the healthcare sector, where people are going to become more productive for longer periods of their lives, well, that's also a powerfully bullish factor. Well, some people are worried about whether they're going to have pensions. And, well, realistically, that's a logical worry, considering the fact that so many pensions are in deficit and governments are just not going to be able to afford them. Well, some people want to retire because they hate their jobs, and some people want to retire because of health reasons, or because they want to spend more time at their hobbies. But, well, if you can remove at least the health motivation, that highly experienced people can spend more time working, well, that solves an awful lot of problems. So it generally doesn't pay to be overly bearish, that when you look at the world and the way things are happening, that it probably pays to be optimistic about the problems that are existing. Well, and certainly there are problems. Well, government bond yields remain at pretty low levels, and that government, central bank balance sheets are continuing to expand. So, well, the supply of money is directly inflationary. That hasn't really happened yet because the velocity of money has been continuing to trend lower. Well, one of the reasons that it continues to trend lower is because you have excess capacity. But I wonder, is it also trending lower because you have, so many steps within the economy have been have disappeared because of innovation and the internet. The number of steps from the manufacturer to the end consumer is getting progressively smaller, and that means that money is traveling through less hands, which means just logically that velocity is deteriorating. Well, if the velocity deteriorates, you can justify having a greater supply of money in order to sustain growth. It isn't really until the velocity of money turns upwards that you need to be quick and smart about withdrawing liquidity. But we're just not there yet. There isn't any great evidence yet. So you're not going to have any kind of monetary problem until you start to see the velocity of money picking up once more. And, well, it hasn't happened just yet. Nevertheless, you see that, well, the European economy has been through the ringer, but it does look like that with QE that it will start to turn around again. And, well, the US is bouncing back from the contraction that it had because of the bad weather in the winter. Well, Japan is very much positioned in the same way. And, well, when you talk about governance and improving governance, then, well, the USA has got some remarkable advantages in terms of energy and technology. It hasn't got the best record in terms of improving governance. If we could get that third strut going, well, then you'd have a very sound argument for why you would have a secular bull market. Well, Europe is in transition. They are covert or otherwise, they're trying to build the United States of Europe. And, it's open to question whether they're going to proceed with all of the countries. Well, certainly you're going to have some in Eastern Europe who want to join the euro because they are afraid of Russia, whereas you're going to have countries like the UK. I think it's very 50-50 whether they'll want to remain part of the union at all. Well, again, that isn't... that is more of a political consideration, but the euro itself is likely to persist. And at present, the euro is, it's been reasonably steady and had an upside key day reversal yesterday. But it has been among the stronger currencies in the world, and it's a bit too strong for the ECB at present, so you're probably not going to see it strengthen beyond the 140 anytime soon. When you start to throw your net a little bit wider, well, we talked about Brazil already, and, well, China is going through this transition as well. Well, they signaled, well, it's nearly 5 years ago, that they were changing their focus from an infrastructure and growth-led model to enhancing their human capital. Well, part of enhancing the human capital is expanding the social security network and the healthcare network and, well, trying to clean up the air and the water and the ground. But it also means that housing has to become a little bit cheaper, and that this will build and they will come attitude has to be moderated. Well, that continues, and well, the stock market remains in need of some form of catalyst to demonstrate that people are really willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. We're really not there just yet, but it's cheap. The market is most definitely cheap. And, well, it's got a high yield and has been reasonably steady over the last few months. So it's unlikely to fall very much further. But the property market definitely represents a threat. Well, in India, you've had this massive leap ahead in terms of the standards of governance. Well, Mr. Modi has got a pro-growth record. And he's going to benefit from a number of the regulatory changes and enhancements that were passed by the last government. So that, the planning process has already been streamlined and he's going to enhance that. And, well, he's working hand in hand with the central bank, that if they can really tackle the structural impediments to growth and the things that keep inflation persistently high, well, the central bank will react by lowering interest rates. This really is the perfect storm for India, and this market could really go up a lot in the next few years. Elsewhere in Asia, well, the Asian tigers, the original ones, Taiwan, Singapore, Korea, and Hong Kong, have not really been doing much of anything for nearly 3 years, but they've moved to a position of outperformance. And, that's noteworthy. When we think about these things in terms of the long term, well, the economic importance of Asia continues to rise. The economic power of Africa, it's coming off a remarkably low base, so it's easy to grow in terms of double-digit growth, and that's exactly what it's doing. The economic importance of Africa and as a trade partner is likely to increase substantially in the next decades. We have challenges out there, and it's easy to become obsessed with negative news flow, but there's a lot of reasons to be positive over the long term. But in the medium term, the cyclical bull market remains, is becoming increasingly mature. So rather than adding new money, it's time to be a little bit more cautious. Well, when you think about all of this, and then you translate that into the government bond markets, well, government bond yields are at remarkably low levels. If you've been in the bond market for the last 30 years and you bought the dips, you've made a very nice living. But that stopped working in the last year, that the total return on bonds, well, it failed to sustain an upward break. It broke back below, it broke down, then it broke down into the underlying range. It moved below the 200-day moving average and stayed there for the longest time in 30 years. And now it has come back up to test the peak and, well, it might be failing up here. Well, it would really need to sustain a breakout to new highs and then hold it to question the topping activity. Well, we don't know how long the topping activity is going to take, but it is looking increasingly likely that this is a top. Well, that would suggest that borrowing costs are going to rise, that it's going to be a more difficult environment in government bonds, and that you do really need to concentrate on an asset class that can keep pace with the decline in bonds, and that's definitely equities. That you get dividend growth in excess of inflation and higher than government bond yields, well, you're probably in pretty safe hands. So the equity market is where you're probably most likely to get a new bull market developing in the next few years, and the government bond market one where you're likely to get a bear market developing in the next few years. Well, against all of this, you have gold, which pulled back remarkably sharply last year and has been ranging between $1,200 and $1,400 for the last year. And it's currently mid-range. It's sitting today at $1,253. Well, this has been a massive inconsistency in what had been a very consistent advance. Last year was the first down year in 10 years. So, well, that's an inconsistency all on its own. And while we're in this ranging environment, we don't know how long this range is going to persist. It really will need to push back above the 200-day moving average to begin to convince people that this is a base formation and not just a step within the overall downtrend. But interest rates are still low, and governments continue to print money. And those are two of the primary reasons that people have wanted gold as an investment hedge. And China and India are still becoming progressively wealthier, and certainly India is in the lead in terms of the growth profile at present. Well, they're consuming more gold than mines are producing on an annual basis at the moment. Well, that should generally help to support gold prices, although they're certainly going to be volatile over the next while. Well, I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I wish all the best to all of you.